Hey, it's Ben Greenfield. In today's podcast, we talk about hauling sandbags up the side of a mountain during a bow hunting competition called Train to Hunt. Where do I get my sandbags? I get them at Onnit. You can go to onnit.com/Ben Greenfield and you can save 5% on any of the fitness equipment. You can save 10% on any of the foods like their tasty walnut butter. And yeah, you could take a contractor bag and you could fill it with pea gravel, and then you could get a burlap sack and you could put the contractor bag with the pea gravel inside the burlap sack, and you could kind of sort of make your own ugly sandbag. It'd take you about an hour or two to do along with all the equipment. It'll fall apart in about 2 or 3 months. So do that if you want to, or go to onnit.com/Ben Greenfield and grab one of their steel bells, which is basically like a small pancake-sized sandbag. It's way heavier than it actually looks. They also have their take on a traditional sandbag, which is a super-duper durable bag that you can fill with sand, you can fill with gravel, whatever you fancy, really. So check them out. Onnit.com/Ben Greenfield. When you use that URL, you'll automatically save. So enjoy hauling that bad boy around.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Even camping, you feel like, man, I'm out here in the wilderness. But guess what? Every animal within a 10-mile radius knows you are there. When you hunt, animals might crawl on top of you. I've seen some of the coolest things animals do while hunting that I would never see if I was hiking or camping.
That's the misconception of hunting. There's a bunch of beer drinking fat rednecks out there just trapping animals and killing them for sport. But there is a lot of nuances and respect, time and effort and planning and work that go into hopefully harvesting a really mature animal.
I'd say the closest thing to compare it to is like a Spartan workout mixed with a CrossFit workout that you shoot during.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Take two. Folks, you just missed 5 minutes of fantastic podcasting with Will Bradley of Natural Born Hunter. And we were sitting up here looking over the Silver Mountain and the Silver Valley recording, just getting into recording a lot of cool tips for you hunters when I looked down and realized that our recording was paused. So we're going to go for round two here, see how that goes. What do you think, Will?
Let's do it. I mean, I don't think we're going to get that podcast gold we had earlier back.
Oh, such gold. We were talking about how there are birth defects related to mining around here. We talked about Lyme disease back in Will's hometown up in upstate New York.
Yeah, and some really, really uplifting knowledge.
We were just getting into STDs and explosive diarrhea when the recording turned off, so it was going to be dynamite. But now we're going to talk about hunting and fitness, because we're out here at the Train to Hunt competition. If you don't know what Train to Hunt is, then go listen to the episode that we did with Kenton Claremont, and you can find that over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com. I believe it's BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Train to Hunt. But today I'm with Will Bradley, who's one of the directors of Train to Hunt. He's really immersed in the hunting scene, and especially the hunting and fitness scene. And like I mentioned, he's from New York. And I don't know a lot about Will. We just actually met this weekend, but from what I've gathered from him so far, he really is a wealth of knowledge on shooting, on hunting, on fitness. He's up here training on a team with a CrossFit competitor, he's a good guy. So, Will, welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks for coming out, man. It's great for the hunter, the Train to Hunt challenge and the hunting athlete community to have someone like you cross over, you know, into this sport and give it a go. Even though you're new to shooting and, you know, you obviously aren't quite there yet as the level of some of the other competitors.
I don't know if it's good for me to be out here for anyone who's out hiking in the trees back behind any of the targets that we're shooting at.
No, give Ben a wide berth when he's shooting.
There have been a few stray arrows, but let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that being said, there's some people who would be too intimidated or scared or come up with some kind of lame BS reason not to come do the competition. But you came, you put it on the line, you competed, you gave it your all, and I think that's what's really important.
Yeah, I don't mind making a fool of myself, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm curious how you got into all this. You know, working construction in upstate New York. What's your story? Did you start off as a hunter? Did you start off as a lifter or a CrossFitter or as a runner? Or where'd you get going on this?
You know, my physical training had consisted of a lot of, you know, regular gym workouts of bench press and curls and all that stuff. And hunting season came around, and I didn't grow up in a hunting family. My dad didn't hunt. My uncles don't hunt. My grandfather did a little bit, but he passed away before he could get me into it. And
that's interesting. You're probably one of the first guys I've met at these things who doesn't come from a hunting background.
Yeah, you know, there's more of us, I think.
It actually makes me feel okay.
You don't come from a hunting background?
Not at all, no. My dad's from Miami, my mom's from Michigan and then Miami. And
not a lot of hunting in Miami?
Not a lot of hunting in Miami, at least not for not for wild animals. A lot of hunting that goes on at 4 a.m. at the nightclubs, but that's about it. So you don't come from
a
hunting family.
They're very similar, though. If you can hunt that, you can hunt anything.
That's right. We'll leave that one alone. So So basically, you didn't come from a hunting family, but you got into construction.
Yep, that is a family business I'm involved in. So I've been doing that. I worked full time every summer since I was 14. I went to college at Morrisville State College, which is about an hour from where I live now, in Morrisville, New York, and I got a degree in residential construction there. Went into the family business, and that's what I've been doing. And I had a lot of friends move away out west to Colorado and other places, and it was becoming, I'd have less and less friends, less to do, and fall would come around. I wouldn't have any sports going on, and there wasn't a lot for me to do. And I thought, well, the friends I do have here hunt, and I'm tired of bumming venison and other meats off them. Maybe I should, you know, go get a gun and teach myself to hunt. So I did, and I've been hunting ever since. The next year, I bought a bow.
You can't just go over that so quickly. You bought a gun and you trained yourself to hunt. Was this?
I taught myself.
You taught yourself to hunt.
I would say there wasn't much training then.
So we're kind of on the same page here, because my first hunting foray was with a YouTube video loaded up with how to field dress an animal.
Yeah.
And my rifle and me. Out there with a pair of jeans and a cotton t-shirt.
Yeah, YouTube's wonderful.
Yeah. Was that your journey, or did you have like a mentor who went out there with you?
It started out where I had a buddy who kind of hunted, but I don't know if he had ever shot anything. And so we were basically going out there, I would say, I really don't know how to word this, what it is when you're not good at hunting at all, but you sit there all day long, which I guess, you know, you're still hunting. But, I mean, we didn't know if we were in a place deer would ever come. I mean,
isn't that an ancient Native American meditation technique?
Yeah, sit spots. I would say.
Just sit there.
I was so good at meditating there, I fell asleep a few times. And so my first season, I go out, and I bought a couple tree stands, set them up, sit in them every day, every weekend for almost all day. And on the last day of the season, I was out with my buddy Tommy, who doesn't hunt, but he came just to keep me company. And we're sitting there, and I had fallen asleep. And he wakes me up, and he's like, man, there's a doe out there. And I was like, really?
You were asleep.
Yeah, he was playing, I think, a Candy Crush on his iPhone. And he wakes me up, and he's like, I think there's a doe out there. And I was like, really? So I lift up my binoculars, and I look. And it was a big size 4-point buck, which, you know, they're still kind of small compared to like an 8, but he was a decent size. So I quickly raised up my rifle, boom, shot him. He dropped right there. We went up there, and luckily my neighbor had hunted before, and he came over and just, I gutted him. He just kind of walked me through it, and I gutted him out. We took him up to a buddy's. We hung him up. the next week, I don't know if it was a week later, but soon after, we butchered them up, and I was eating them throughout the year.
Wow. Wow. And so from there, were you just hooked on hunting?
I mean, yeah.
Did you get into it hardcore after that?
Yeah, I was hooked on hunting the minute I went and sat in the woods, because when you hunt, you're not, you know, I've hiked a lot before that. We have something back in the Adirondacks they call the 46 High Peaks, which are the 46 highest mountains that are all over 4,600 feet in New York State. And I've been into those, you know, one of my goals is to climb all of those. So I was ticking away at climbing all of those, hiking a lot, you know, I kayak, do all that, you know, camp in the wilderness. But when you hunt, you become part of the wilderness. You're not just someone strolling through it. Or, I mean, even camping, you feel like, man, I'm out here in the wilderness. But guess what? Every animal within a 10-mile radius knows you are there. When you hunt, animals might crawl on top of you. I've seen some of the coolest things animals do while hunting that I would never see if I was hiking or camping.
So there's a disconnect for me here, and that is that you shot your first animal from a tree stand, falling asleep while your friend played Candy Crush.
Yeah.
And I think that is a lot of people's perception of many hunters, is that they aren't fit, that fitness isn't required, and that it's almost unfair, really, in that you're hiding up in a tree somewhere with a projectile object, whether it's a bow and arrow or a gun, taking out an animal. Where did you make the transition from sitting up in a tree stand, falling asleep with your friend waking you up, to actually getting involved with something like train to hunt, or even realizing that fitness is required for hunting?
Well, let me put it this way. It sounds easy the way I did it, but when I say it was the last day of the season, we have a season that runs from, I think it's mid-October to late November. And if you were to count the amount of hours I spent in the woods after work, I had never, it would be in the,
that's hard work on your sitting muscles.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to have patience, and you have to go out there, and not knowing what you're doing, you really have to spend a lot more time out there than people who know what they're doing.
Nerves fall asleep. No, but you're right. I do know that it takes some patience, but, you know, now you've got a podcast that's devoted to, like, fitness hunting, and,
yep.
And I know, are you doing, like, more spot and stock style hunting now as well?
Nope.
Still hunting from the tree
still
stand.
Still hunting. Well, it's like this. You don't have to be fit to hunt. And so all those guys out there who say, you know, you don't have to be in shape to kill an animal, you're 100% right. You do not have to be in shape to do it. But it will make it a billion times easier on you. It'll make everything you do that involves hunting, whether it's if you're an East Coast or Midwest hunter hunting whitetail, you know, over a food plot, it still takes a lot of talent and dedication to harvest a mature animal. And planting seeds, setting tree stands, all the work that leads up to hunting season, it's just easier when you're fit. And not only that, you're going to live, you know, hopefully live longer because of it.
That's a lot. It's a lot different answer than what I kind of expected out of you, because that's often, you know, kind of the complaint that I hear people make about hunters is that, you know, you're baiting an animal and you're waiting for it versus going out there and making it a fair fight, you know, as you stalk through the trees and, you know, maybe do like archery out in, I guess it's more of like an East thing than a West, isn't it? More of the tree stand style hunting in the East versus the spot and stalk in the West.
The concentration of hunters is on the East Coast. We have like the top, I don't know, maybe it's top three out of the top five populated hunting states. I mean, if you were to compare the numbers, it's probably, I don't want to throw numbers out there not knowing the facts, but we may double the population of hunters in the West, and that's what most people do. And as an East Coast hunter, I can tell you going from, well, I guess I'll tell you the story. So I was out setting a tree stand the following season. I had bought a bow the year after my first rifle season, decided, you know what, I want to be a bow hunter. I get to go into the woods earlier. It just seems cooler, more intimate. It's harder, and that's just where I want to be. And so I go out, I set this. We have 100 acres of hardwoods mixed in with we have a farmer who plants soybeans out there in a field. And I went in, and I went down by this creek. I had to go off a ridge to get down in there, and I'm hiking out with my stuff, and I keep having to stop because I feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And it was the moment where I decided I can't be like this anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's what people should be aware of, is even if you're sitting up in a tree stand, you're still doing massive amounts of hiking, and if you have a successful hunt, massive amounts of hiking with a significant amount of weight, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, that, like you said, that's the misconception of hunting, that it's a bunch of beer drinking fat rednecks out there just, you know, trapping animals and killing them for sport. But there is a lot of nuances and respect and time and effort and planning and work that go into hopefully harvesting a really mature animal. I mean, that's the goal. Nobody's out there killing, you know, yearlings and fawns, or hopefully not doing it. The goal is to harvest an old, you know, near the end of its life animal. Mm. But, you know, because it keeps the population, that herd population healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And really the ethics of hunting, you know, Kenton and I hit on this when I had Kenton Claremont on the podcast, too, in our initial Train to Hunt episode. And that's certainly, you know, it's kind of a whole different topic altogether. I know we're going to kind of hone in on the fitness component here in just a second. But by the way, I was going to tell you that's a pretty bold thing for someone to accuse folks of thinking that hunters are just fat redneck beer drinking folks sitting around, from a guy who's sitting there drinking a Nevada Sierra Pale Ale.
This is my victory
actually,
here.
Context for you. We're sitting here looking at the Train to Hunt finish line as we're recording this podcast. You may have heard children playing on the playground behind us. My kids are out there somewhere. It's a real family event. Will's drinking his beer. I'm eating my deer sausage with my avocado here, my paleo meal, dipping it in barbecue sauce from the ski resort. And Will, you
paleo
you,
barbecue sauce.
Paleo barbecue sauce. I'm going to assume with a little bit of high fructose corn syrup added in. So you got into hunting a little bit more intensively after you got that first buck.
Yeah.
Where did Natural Born Hunter and this whole like podcast and kind of like hunting entertainment, you know, side gig that you're doing now, start?
You know, the podcast came about from a lot of different things that just kind of connected and ended up happening. But so after that hike in the woods where I just felt like I was going to die on my way out, I talked to my girlfriend at the time, who's now my fiance, and said, you know, I really think we should look for something to get in better shape. So we joined our local CrossFit box, CrossFit Mohawk Valley, and I was hanging out at the bow shop, you know, talking about fitness, and somebody said, hey, have you heard of Train to Hunt? And I said, no, what's Train to Hunt? And so I got online and I looked it up and I was like, man, this combines the things that I love and I want to do. So I looked up where there was a challenge, and there was one just outside of Denver. My sister lived in Denver, so I made it my goal to train for about 6 months leading up to it. They'd let me shoot in the box, and they came up with a program just for me to do it, and I just started training I wanted to be the national champion at the time. It didn't work out that way, but I became a much healthier, well-rounded individual and a much better hunter and much more fit in the process.
Why didn't it work out that way? What do you think are your biggest barriers to being like a train to hunt champion?
I can't say I would have beat Phil at the Fort Collins, Colorado qualifier.
And Phil is your podcast co-host,
yeah, Phil,
right?
Phil
is the train to hunt champion. Yeah. He's your podcast co-host.
Yep. He beat me at the Fort Collins qualifier. Then he won nationals. But I dropped an arrow at the fifth target and didn't realize it till I got to the sixth.
Oops.
And had to run back. So I got to the sixth target. Phil was just leaving it, and I had to run all the way back and get it. And I still managed to play second place, so I was pretty stoked about that. And then I got to, and I knew the elevation had hurt me there, but then when we went up to nationals, which is like at 8,000 feet, the altitude just crushed me.
Mm.
I didn't have a chance.
Yeah. So are you planning on going back to Colorado this year to compete?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to compete because, I mean, you see, and I think you've experienced the community that mm-hmm. goes on here, all the nice people. You know, you make friends. So, you know, Matt and I will qualify today for nationals, so we'll go and give it our best shot. And that's, you know, if you care about just getting a gold medal, then, you know, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Yeah, medals are nice. But the experience and the journey along the way is something I've always valued over that standing on the podium.
Are you using an elevation training mask?
No.
To get ready for the altitude?
No, I can't say that I am. If anyone listened to our most recent Natural Born Hunter podcast, I had my buddy Joe on, who's a respiratory care therapist, and he pretty much told me I was an idiot for trying, for wearing it. So, and I actually tried it before leading up to Colorado. I spent a lot of time with it, and it didn't help one bit.
Well,
so after that, it was.
I don't think they're a sponsor for today's episode, anyway.
Sorry, Elevation Training Masks.
Yeah, I mean, there is that misconception out there that Elevation Training Masks put you at elevation. They train your inspiratory and expiratory muscles, but they in no way decrease the partial pressure of oxygen in the
exactly
air
that
you're breathing.
Exactly what he was saying.
So, yeah, there is that little disconnect. But you know what? To their credit, I think they admit that.
It makes everything you do tougher. It makes you tough.
It makes
I'll
you
say
look
that.
Cool, too. So what does... You know, you're a train and hunt director.
Yeah.
You have a pretty intimate knowledge of the fitness requirements. What does a typical workout look like for you? Gold standard workout to get ready for something like this.
You know, it'll be intervals thrown in with the things we do here, whether it's burpees, sandbags. Sometimes they'll be close to like a I'd say the closest thing to compare it to is like a Spartan workout mixed with a CrossFit workout that you shoot during. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll do like an interval, whether it's a rower, a run, or aerodyne. You'll do something physical. I'll shoot, go back, and, you know, it's whether it's
how's
for time or
work?
Reps. Or
people haven't done this before. Do you actually have a target in your gym?
Yeah, I got a target. Yeah, I've only missed it and shot through the wall twice. So I think that's pretty good because I've probably shot hundreds of arrows in there and only sent two through the wall. Sorry, John.
I have a feeling after competing this weekend that my home would be like a target full of porcupine quills. After trying something like that in the gym. But so you're running, you're stopping, you're shooting. It seems to me that there actually is a decent amount of running at this competition.
Yeah.
I was surprised at the ground that you cover. Do you think that the train to hunt workouts reflect that in terms of the amount of running that you guys do?
Yeah, those, I would say they do. I mean, I'll mix in the train to hunt workouts in my programming, but it's not just that. But I think leading up to the next one, I'm gonna kind of switch over more endurance focus because that's my pretty obvious weakness.
Yeah. Now, how about the nutrition component? Hunters are known kind of like for being, you know, fat beer drinking rednecks who sit up in trees waiting for an animal to come. They're known for, you know, donuts and beer and coffee out of styrofoam cups and those type of things. In your opinion, Are people who are at these type of competitions on the healthy eating bandwagon, are they like the paleo types, or what's your perspective on the nutrition
component?
I'd
say you get a mix of people who either go paleo, macros, or, you know, may eat just strict clean, or, you know, some others may mix it up. But looking out over here, we can see probably 90% of the competitors down there, and I don't think I can't see an unfit one person down there.
Yeah, they're pretty lean. What's your diet look like?
My diet's macros, so I eat for the carbs.
You eat for the carbs?
I mean, I eat, you know, I'd have to look up in my fitness pal what my carbs and proteins and all that is. But coming into the competition, my focus was to lose fat and maintain the muscle I had. And I had a plan of about, I think it was a pound a month of fat. And I was hitting that goal, so I'm just going to keep doing that.
So you mean that you're restricting carbs or you're trying to eat more carbs?
You know, I had never done it before, so I don't know if it was it was restricting compared to my old diet that had a lot of pizza in it.
So are you following a specific, like, dietary protocol that someone's given you?
Yeah.
Or, like,
a
menu?
Yeah, my buddy Ryan from Bare Bone Strength, he, calculates my macros for me and, helps me monitor all that. Then, you know.
So you log your food and you send it to him?
I use my Fitness Pal and he checks it, makes sure, you know, everything's going the way it should be. And honestly, I would say counting macros has been the easiest way for me to eat, for my goals.
And by that, you mean that you are calculating protein, fat, and carbohydrate percentages.
That would be correct.
And are you shooting for a specific percentage?
Yeah, I got it on my Fitness Pal. I can tell you what it is.
Phone?
Yeah, I got it on my phone.
All right, gotcha. So,
for those of you who don't use my Fitness Pal, it is a fantastic app.
Yeah, most of the clients who I coach for nutrition, we've gotten off the food logging bandwagon. What I used to do is they'd send me an email with what they'd eaten at the end of the week. They'd just keep it in an Evernote doc, or a few of them use like MyFitnessPal or something like that. Now I do all photo logging. So everybody has a Flickr account that they share with me.
Really?
And they take photos of their food and they just share with me their Flickr account that you can keep private or public. So that's cool. To look at the food. Okay, so you got it pulled up here, your calories and macros.
So I'm at
40% protein. 100
calories a day, 40% protein, 35% carbs, and 25% fats.
Gotcha. And do you pay attention to the quality of the macros at all?
Oh, yeah. My fiance is a little bit of a foodie. She cooks all our foods. We do meal preps on Sundays, so we have everything ready. Most of our meat comes from, probably two meals a week come from venison because she hunts as well. And as you, I'm sure you know the nutritional value of wild game meats and all that,
yeah,
which is pretty healthy and lean.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't, have you ever done the looking at the SKU numbers?
You mean the barcode on labels?
Yeah, we're supposed to tell you how percent of untampered with it is or whatever. Or?
The percent of which?
Like, it's supposed to, I think it's Practical Paleo. It talks about if it starts with this number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The other book that goes into that is Bad Calories, Rich Food, Poor Food by Mira and Jason Kelton gets into that, too, how you can look at the SKU numbers on the back and certain numbers are associated with, I forget if it's like organic versus non-organic.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it works.
It's kind of interesting. Those numbers can actually tell you a lot.
Yeah, so we go by those.
My catch 22 on that is we eat these days so little packaged food that I rarely actually am looking at a barcode or a label.
Yeah.
So that's the only issue with that. But yeah, it can be a handy little trick.
Funny thing about that, we started a vegetable garden. And we have 30 pheasants and 30 I think they're Cornish game hens.
Nice.
No. They're French guinea hens.
Nice.
Yep. So we're raising birds, going to have some eggs.
Oh, you're raising them. They're not like wild birds that have come in since you started the garden.
Nope. We're going to start, got a little chicken coop. We got to have a fly pen and everything, raise them.
Very cool. Yeah, we recently added a little mobile chicken coop in a barn to our,
they're cool, right?
Our homestead. Yeah. Yeah.
They're cool, man.
Chickens are cool to have around. And frankly, I was afraid that a rooster would be really annoying. And man, about one of the coolest things when I go out on my porch every morning and do yoga. I'm one of those guys where out in my underwear doing yoga on the porch. It's something about that rooster calling
nice
in the background
visual there.
In the morning. There's something that feels really homey about being outside and just hearing your rooster crowing on a quiet early morning.
You know, I think with hunting, and you may see it from, I don't know how many guys you're friends with on Facebook or Instagram, but you see a lot of guys who are also, you know, I would say the hunter-athlete side, who are also into that homesteading type thing, where I know we were on Mark Warnke's podcast, and, you know, he's got goats and chickens,
Hunts podcast. As a matter of fact, I believe that there's some goat action going on when I was on his podcast recently. So you can that's the outdoors, I believe it's Outdoors Adventures podcast
or International.
Yeah, Outdoors International podcast. That's another good one for hunting. And I got to tell you, Will, now that I'm getting more into this train to hunt challenge and hunting in general, I'm discovering this whole new world. You know, your podcast, Natural Born Hunter, which I found through Kifaru, which creates some of the gear that I've been wearing. This guy named Aaron Snyder.
Yeah, he's a badass.
Got an interview with him on your podcast, and then there's this Outdoors International podcast, and I found another one the other day called the Gritty Bowman podcast, which is another good one, chock full of advice. So these things are popping up all over the place. Why is it that you think hunting, and especially fitness in hunting, is growing? What's your take on this? Is there a reason for it? Is it just a passing fad, or what's going on?
You know, I think fitness as a whole is on an uptick, and I'm sure you see that with the Spartan races and the stuff you do, that, you know, more and more people are deciding, oh, man, I don't want to be miserable. I don't want to feel miserable. I don't want to be put on drugs to have to feel good all the time.
Well,
I want to chase that natural high.
You know, people were doing marathoning in the 80s, right, and bodybuilding in the 70s. To me, it seems that this whole, like, outdoors, natural movement, right?
Yeah,
getting outdoors, getting your hands dirty, Spartan,
functional.
Tough Mudder, even American Ninja Warrior, functional fitness. And I was talking, and I know I asked you the question, and I'm starting to talk now, but I was talking after I crossed the finish line about an hour ago about how it just feels very ancestrally appropriate to be running with a weapon, stopping, shooting, and having to get your heart rate down, and then continue to run again as though you were chasing or being chased. But unlike a Spartan or a triathlon or a marathon, you're not doing it all day long.
No.
Right? It's and, 20 minutes, and 30 minutes.
And here's the thing. It's like, all right, most people work a day job, 9 to 5, right? They come home and they might practice shooting and work out and all that, but the animals are always out there. They are way more wood savvy and smart about predators than we are about hunting them. And events like this kind of give you that, I would say, old school competitive glimpse of what maybe a hunting gatherer or a small native tribe would have experienced. And I would say the train to hunt challenge, you know, the train to hunt people are almost a small little kind of tribe within the hunting community. And I think when you come here, you get that visceral experience. You're not maybe competing against an animal, but you're competing against other really hardworking, talented people who are going to push you to those limits.
Yeah, and for there's this whole philosophy of like move, lift, sprint as being the ultimate fitness program for longevity. And yesterday we were moving for what, 4 hours?
Yep.
Just low level as we did a 3D course, walking through the woods, and then we were lifting, right, 80 pounds that we had to carry. Well, you know, a mile or so. And then today we were sprinting, you know, with a 20-pound pack and sprinting straight up the side of a mountain and stopping and shooting. And that's,
while lifting.
That was really everything, yeah.
Lifting while in lifting, the middle, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's one of those things that just feels very appropriate. But I'm curious where you think the whole hunting component fits in. Do you think more people are interested in gathering their own food and hunting as they become fed up with modern egg or you know the crappy food from the grocery store? What do you think's going on?
I mean, and I talked about this before on a podcast a little. It's like watermelons don't taste like watermelon anymore. Chicken doesn't taste like chicken anymore. Nothing tastes like it used to. If you have elk or bear or deer, it tastes so different, and there's actually flavors in there than a lot of food you'll buy in a grocery store today. And I think once people start eating it, they're like, whoa, there's the difference. And then they look at the nutritional facts and they're like, well, this makes sense. And on top of that, with that harvest, you know, the, what is it, locavore movement? Is that
right? Locavore, local harvest. Yeah.
Yeah. That movement.
The 100 mile diet.
Yeah. I think that plays into it. And, you know, you look back at what our ancestors were eating and doing a long, long time ago. And, you know, it kind of plays into that as well as the hunting movement will grow. But I think specifically the bow hunting movement, because I see the bow as it's a much different weapon, a much more personal weapon than a gun.
Yeah.
As you know, getting into it, you can't just pick it up and pull the trigger and bam, hit what you're aiming at.
And it's kind of like golf in that sense. It's addicting, right?
Yes.
It's like you're
very
driving
much.
Golf.
Very much
you
like
want,
golf.
You want perfection.
Yes.
And I've found myself whittling away, almost feeling guilty, coming in after spending an hour messing around and shooting and setting up a target somewhere else and shooting again outside. Mm-hmm. You lose yourself as you're shooting.
It's, you know, you do yoga. My fiance is very into yoga. She's an, would they be instructors or teachers?
I don't know. Yogis?
Oh, either yogis. She teaches at our CrossFit box. She's tried the kettlebell yoga before. And she bow hunts. And for me, what she gets out of yoga, I get out of archery.
Yeah.
It's the draw. I work box breathing into my archery.
And you go into the zone.
Oh. My coach talks about there's the B game, which is conscious archery of focusing on your aiming and your releasing and your follow through. And once you get that nailed down, you start working on your A game, which is where it happens without thought.
Mm, yeah.
And that's where you start. It'll be 10, 10, 10.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So what are, in your opinion, you've probably seen a lot of new people come into this sport. What do you think are the biggest mistakes that people are making, either from a workout or a shooting or a mental or a physical standpoint?
The biggest mistake? Man, you know, here in Colorado, I mean, not in Colorado, Northern Idaho, I see some really good competition. And, you know, I think when people follow the train to hunt stuff, they end up getting a lot of good information. They get into this world. And people are just really willing to give to help you out with whatever it is. So they don't get too off track. But if you were to get into this, to avoid maybe some things, is instead of putting a lot of money into the bow right off the bat, Maybe spend, you know, instead of getting a $1,000 bow, because it sounds real fancy, go with maybe a $400 to $600 bow, and then spend a little more on your pack if you're going to be doing these challenges or plan on packing out meat. I'm sure you can attest to this, that having a good pack on that meat pack was very important.
Well, having a good pack, and this even yesterday, right before I sat out on the meat pack, you and Matt were helping me adjust where I placed the weight within the pack, where the waist belt was sitting on my waist, how my delta straps and my shoulder straps and my load straps were set up. That stuff all makes a huge difference when you don't have your weight kind of like jiggling around in your pack,
yeah.
And when it's sitting on your on your hips properly, and the weight is distributed on the kind of like the mid back as far as its placement in the pack, that makes a huge difference.
It does, and this is the cool thing I think about the hunting industry that people don't get to see is companies like Kafaru, who makes your pack and my pack, and guys like Aaron Snyder who kind of head up the design and innovations there, that they are insane about perfecting it and about getting everything. I mean, the testing they go through with it. He has a whole, they call it the Mountain Warrior Boot Camp, where they get like 10 guys together and they'll do the stadium at Red Rocks, you know, the steps there, or they'll go do these mountains, and, you know, he gets the feedback.
Where's that at, in Denver?
Yeah, just outside Denver. Red Rocks, you ever go
there?
Okay.
No.
The amphitheater?
No, never.
Oh, you should check it out. It's a heck of a workout. So it's a great, great, cool experience, because there's a ton of people working out there.
Huh.
Like, it can be packed on weekends. And
are these actual stairs?
Yeah, like they're
like built into the
side
of a mountain?
Built into the side of a mountain in this big, I guess it would be Red Rocks Park or whatever.
Huh.
I don't know the exact name, but I know it's the Red Rocks Amphitheater. And they take these steps and they turn them into workouts. And, you know, they'll be doing lunges. Some people will be jumping them, doing push-ups when they get to, like, a level surface, lunging up, you know, burpees, lunge up, like, or squat up, whatever. They come up with them. And there's all these kinds of people that are doing it. And they go through all this testing and they do all this stuff. And honestly, I don't know if there's a backpacking company out there that can beat Kafaru's pack. But you don't see it in Backpacker Magazine. You don't see them in Outside Magazine. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's what people are missing out on.
And I purchased one just because I asked the director of Train to Hunt, Kenton, about, you know, which pack would be most appropriate, and he recommended that one. And
What'd you think of it?
It works really well, and I would agree with you that it seems to me that a mistake that a lot of people could make, you know, including myself, I've gathered a whole new body of knowledge that I wish I'd had. Like last year I did, I don't know if you and I have talked about this much, Will, but I did the SEAL Fit Kokoro Camp, which is like the Navy SEAL Hell Week equivalent.
I think I heard your podcast
for civilians, and you do a ton of rucking.
Yeah.
I thought I knew a lot about rucking when I finished that. After competing in and prepping for Train to Hunt, I know so much more about selecting a pack, about packing a pack, about adjusting a pack. And that I know, come hunting season, is going to come in incredibly handy when it comes to packing out meat and packing in.
Yeah, you want to be comfortable when you do it.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Don't want to be in pain.
I took my kids out in the wilderness a couple weeks ago and had that Kafaru pack, and I was able to just carry everything that we needed in that pack, and it does make a big difference. Now, how about, in addition to the pack, shooting mistakes that you see beginners make when they're trying to get into something like this? And please don't shove me under the bus too.
You know, I think the hardest thing for shooters, and I think you can attest to this, is yardage judging. And one of the downfalls to the archery community is the lack of really good coaches. I was fortunate enough that I went out and found a good coach to get better for the Train to Hunt events. And I have to travel 3 hours to go get coached. Or sometimes he'll meet me halfway. I mean, once in a while I'll come up. But I'll travel 3 hours. Other guys will travel up from Pennsylvania. He lives in southern New York. And guys will come from Ohio. You know, so that tells you there's one guy that I know of for the Northeast, and I'm pretty active in all the social media and on, you know, on the uptake of what's going on in the industry, and I know of one guy.
There's some low-hanging fruit for you people who know how to shoot out there. Get into shoot coaching. Yeah, I agree. I thought, because I've been using my rangefinder and I've been shooting, and I got a nice bow. I invested in a nice bow. I was pretty confident going into yesterday. When we walked out there onto that course with 20 different animals hidden out in the forest, and, you know, we were walking through there taking shots, I was confident going in and thought I knew how to judge yardage, and I didn't know a thing. It was incredibly humbling. And that's probably one of the number one things I learned out here was you have to be an accurate judge of yardage.
Think about this. You don't have to have the best, like there is a technique to shooting, a proper setup and all that. But if you can, if you have a terrible setup, a terrible technique, a terrible anchor point, a terrible everything, but you can repeat it every single time you shoot, you will hit the same spot every single time you shoot. But if you don't know the yardage, it doesn't matter because you're going to go up there, you're not going to feel confident, and it's you're just going to release a bad shot. You know, if you don't want to shoot bad shots, don't release them.
In your opinion, if you could give folks the number one tip, this is a completely self-serving question, by the way. If you could give people the number one tip for judging yardage, what would your tip be?
My number one tip would be find a coach. But my second number one tip would be there's a crossover method, they call it, where you stand on one foot and you look at the – well, you say you stand on your left foot. You stand over your left foot and you draw a line from the right side of the end of the animal to your left foot, you know, in your ground with, you know, your mind. And then you stand on your right foot. You have to have a wide stance for this. But you stand on your right foot and then go from the left rear end of the animal back to your right foot.
Right.
And you'll be able to tell kind of where halfway point is between the two, between you and the target, based on where those lines cross. And it's a lot easier to judge, you know, 10 to 15 yards, which normally, you know, at most, maybe it'll be 30 yards to the halfway point for a 60-yard target. But it's a lot easier to judge up to 30 yards than it is to judge straight out to 60.
So you judge that halfway point and then multiply by two.
Yep.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. So we've got packing. Selecting the appropriate pack and knowing how to pack it being one skill that's something that would tend to get neglected or fly under the radar for folks who want to get into this sport. We've got knowing how to judge yardage, being a good judge of yardage. If you had to choose one more thing that you think that folks should really target getting into train to hunt, what would it be?
Training. The training. The actual. I mean, I'm assuming most of your listeners are coming in pretty fit. So, you know, I'm going to give you all the benefit of the doubt that Ben's got you squared away with what you're doing physically. And I'm sure, you know, I'll give him credit. He came in here and dominated the meat pack. He just blew the doors off this thing. And I think, I don't know what the other people came in from the first heat, but he smoked the train to hunt challenge course today. I don't know what he got for his shooting, but he was flying. So, you know, he can help you on the fitness side, or Kent can help
you. And there's also, there's the Train to Hunt website, and Kent and I talked about this, where they actually give you, it's like a WOD, right?
Yep, they give you the workouts.
A daily WOD. You know, one thing that I noticed that really, you know, still, even though I'm relatively fit and have a decent HRR, right, that heart rate recovery.
Yep.
And if you want to, by the way, learn even more about heart rate recovery,
listen to
the podcast I did with Dr. James Heathers, where we talked about heart rate variability, heart rate recovery, and using something called breath ladders to actually increase your ability to recover your heart rate. It's essentially doing deep nasal breathing during hard workouts is the short story. But what I found was that I still think, even though I feel like I'm a fit guy, shooting well while gassed. Really getting your heart rate up through the frigging roof, right? Not just doing five burpees and taking a shot, which I have to admit, that's probably more of the type of training I did, but instead, like, going 2 minutes at a full-on glycolytic pace and then taking a shot. I know my yardage judging was a little bit off, my ability to kind of get my pack packed appropriately and set up appropriately, but then also that shooting while really, really tired.
Yeah. Here's where the, I would say, coaching comes into play with my coach of the B game and A game. I'm supposed to, you know, if everything goes right when I come into this challenge, there's no B game, only A game, which means the only thing I have to do is stare at what I want to hit. When I shoot, I couldn't tell you where, say, the 10-yard or 20-yard pin is in my field of vision. It just disappears. And I'm just looking at it. Yeah, and
so
that's
you don't
how
look at the
be.
Pin and line
no,
the pin up with
important.
The target. You just look at the actual target, and you're looking kind of like through your pin.
Yeah, when you shoot, the best way for aiming is you bring your bow up, so you're looking through your peep, you got your pin out there. Once you got it to the right height, it should disappear, and you should be looking at where you want that arrow to go. Because at that last second, he always says your front hand will go to to it, your bow hand will go towards where you're looking at, and it'll send your arrow where it's supposed to go. Like, if I gave you a ball right now and I said, Ben, hit that sign over there, you're going to either hit it or come really close to it. And it's because that old, you know, what did we used to do to get food?
We would use throwing sticks. Spears or some
and
kind
sticks,
of implement.
So, you know, we have great hand-eye coordination thanks to our ancestors.
Yeah.
And
so
it's that same hand-eye coordination. That pin is a distraction.
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. I talked a little bit about this when I interviewed Chris McDougall, of the guy who wrote the book Natural Born Heroes. We didn't talk about this a lot in the podcast, but he certainly talks about it a lot in his book about how one of the skills that humans have for both self-defense as well as catching prey is this skill of hand-eye coordination, and specifically being able to throw objects, hurl objects, or manipulate objects to be able to move through space that you don't see many other animals on the face of the planet doing, aside from, like, you know, monkeys throwing their poop.
Yeah.
And the ability to be able to combine that with winding up and then releasing your fascia, right, like turning your hips and that type of thing, where, you know, in the case of a bow, the fascia for you is the cam, right?
Mm-hmm.
On something like compound bow. But ultimately, it's an interesting observation that if you look at this as being something similar to throwing and using that hand-eye coordination appropriately,
the bow should be an extension of your body.
Yeah.
That's what it really becomes.
Well, mine is certainly not yet an extension of my body. I have a little.
It's a new body part.
Mine still feels like a new body part, exactly. It's like back when I started doing triathlon, that bike with the skinny wheels felt like a foreign object underneath. You know, now it's like natural. I can hop on a bike and it feels like it just molds to my body. But yeah, it's interesting.
But anything for you, like it's time. You just need the time to train for that. Till you get it to where you got to work on your B game long enough to start developing an A game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, folks, if you're listening in and you're interested in getting involved with this whole train to hunt thing, and maybe you don't hunt, but you just want to get a taste for it as a gateway to getting into hunting, a few resources for you. Of course, the traintohunt.com website, the previous podcast episode that I did with Kenton Claremont, Will Bradley is here with me, and his website is it naturalbornhunters.com?
Yep, naturalbornhunter.com.
Naturalbornhunter.com. If you want a link in the show notes to all these resources, you can go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/hunting. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/hunting, and I'll put plenty of resources there for you. Will, I'm going to put you on the spot here. If people have questions about train to hunt, about selecting equipment, about that type of thing, would you be willing, if they left them in the comment section, would you be willing to hop in every now and again and maybe pipe in and give people a few pieces of advice? You can say no and asshole if you want.
No, ain't nobody got time for that. yeah, I'd love to. You know, I'll pop into the show notes or your Facebook page, wherever you are. You could hit us up at Train to Hunt. Hit us up on our Natural Born Hunter Facebook page, Instagram, wherever. And that's the thing. If you have questions, this community will welcome you with open arms. We love new people who show an interest, and they will help you with anything. And I think Ben's experienced that of, you want to do this? We'll help you do what you can to put yourself in the best spot to win. We can't win it for you, but we'll help you do whatever it takes. And that's one thing Phil Mendoza, my co-host from the podcast, who's the current Train to Hunt national champion, says is, I don't want to beat anybody who doesn't feel like they're competing at their best. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to be at their best. He makes my arrows. He makes Matt's arrows. He helps all the other competitors with their bow setups and everything. When I was competing against him, after I met him, we became friends, and he would give me just tons of advice, and it works. And people, you know, if you're interested, just hit us up.
So it's Will Bradley, naturalbornhunter.com. All the show notes are at bengreenfieldfitness.com/hunting. Thanks for listening in to our podcast episode here up on the top of Silver Mountain, looking over the children playing on the playground, who you probably heard a little bit of in the background, looking over the train to hunt finish line, the beautiful trees. Will and I may actually go down here after recording this episode and take a few shots down at the 3D course down there in the trees. And I just want to finish by encouraging you, if you're listening in, get out there, whatever it is for you that's the natural movement, whether it's getting into trees, park, nature, and anything else you want to add in, Will?
Yeah, this is all, you hear all the kids in the background, but it's because people are bringing their families. It's a family sport, Guys are doing it with their girlfriends or husbands. People are doing it. You know, their kids are out here. Some of them are competing. And or if they're not old enough to compete, they bring them and they just hang out. Nobody. Yeah.
Rumor is they're going to add a youth division, too.
To this thing.
So my kids have already asked me to step up their bows that they have back home to something a little bit more competitive. And we're heading down to Tamarack, Idaho here in 5 days to go compete down there. So it's a great family event too. So
it's really cool when you hear like Ben's kids yelling, go daddy, you're doing awesome. You know, it's a very cool competition that, you know, and if you want to just come check it out, just come hang out for a day.
That's right. So check it all out. BenGreenfieldFitness.com/hunting. Will, thank you, dude.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening in. Have a healthy week.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.